Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Matty B. And it's peak off season because last week I texted you, Matt, before the show, and I was like, I hope you have like topics because I didn't do any research at all this week. Because like typically during football, people are sending me stuff and they're like, did you see this? Or this doesn't make any sense, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always into it. But since the football's over, kind of, it just died down. And I know the UFL is kind of coming back. I don't even know if it started yet. But this week, finally, I got some stories that I actually can share. Because two controversies. Let's start with the one you found first. The Pitt Lacrosse posted a picture, or they posted a tweet about what's that smell during their game. And then the picture came out that one of the refs may have pooped himself during the game. And I asked you, is this like a Joe Paterno scenario where the ref just changes pants and we don't really know, but you can assume the way they ran off the field? But the picture makes it look like it's a little bit more suspicious. So I want to get your thought on the controversy. Do you think?
Well, there has been that stomach bug that's been going around. So I can totally see that this just being an explosive diarrhea situation.
My thing is, I feel like there would be at least one player that would react, right? Because like you'd be giving a head like, what? Did someone septic's overflow during this game? Like, what's going on here?
But like, if I'm that ref, it's a wrap. I'm out. I'm walking straight to my vehicle, getting something to put down on the seats, and I'm out.
So my first thing was, it almost looked like they cut their knee really bad and it's blood. Because I assume the photo's kind of blurry, but it looks like there's a laceration above the kneecap. And it almost looked like there's kind of a scar, so I didn't know if they just had knee surgery. And so it looks like they just fell during the game, which would make more sense, which is still embarrassing because, like, you don't want to be bleeding a ton down your leg.
Well, in all fairness, though, it was Pitt First, Detroit Mercy, Lacrosse. So God knows what channel that it was being displayed on.
Oh, Matt, it's the ACC Network, baby. I can see the logo right here.
Well, right, but is it the Raycom channel? Is it the CW? If it was the CW, they would be showing the replay of the ref actually crapping themselves like 19 times. Like, so, oh, there it is.
So you're saying the CW has the best replay booth in the game, right?
No.
Because I looked and it's hitting national news and people are saying it's most likely not poo, but they're not bringing up the other scenario, which the ref fell during the game. It's just bleeding out. You would think that they would stop it because if it's a player, right, and there's blood, I mean, maybe the ref's like, I'm not going to contact any of these girls. But I would think that they would had to stop that and cover that up.
Well, even so, I would think that they would want to not have someone with poop running down their leg.
Well, there's only 45 seconds left. So maybe, on the other hand,
let's just finish it.
She's like, all right, this isn't going to take that long. But then they scored a goal. And she's like, oh, crap. There it goes. And then just runs off the field. But I feel like they should speak out because that's a good opportunity to really get your name out there. I don't know if you could be like the Ed Hockley of lacrosse. Where you're more known for strange fluids on your leg during the game than like Ed's muscles or whatever. But it's our first topic of the week. Anything else you want to add on that?
No.
Check it out. Let us know what you think. Blood or poop? That could be a good debate. The other one, and NFL news, Matt, this is what I'm bringing in. I'm like, normally it's hard for me to find NFL news. I know the combine, we're going to get to that in a second. But Tyreek Hill is involved with a broken leg. Didn't break his own leg. I'm going to lay out this scenario because it almost seems like it's a weird fan fiction, right? So a plus size model slides into his DMs, right? Starts talking about how she's 6'1". He put the word out, no, and he even threw, there's no way, and put a sheesh in there, which I haven't heard someone use in a text for a long time, right? So he says, no, there's no way, sheesh. And then she said, I'll prove it to you. And he said, you'll be towering over everyone down there. Because that would be the article from the, what, I don't even know where it was from, the Daily Mail, maybe. They said that would mean she's 3 inches taller than him. So, so he has, like, private lessons, I guess, at his house. Right? Because then she says about getting her son, like, private lessons from him, and she'll come down. So he's going to fly her out. And he puts in there, I could be a good stepdad. Which is weird, right, to say. But you know what she's going to get to when she's coming down here. She's going to be involved in the practice herself. So she comes to the house. He tells her that
her mouthpiece fitted.
It gets better. He told her that she should practice the drills of an offensive lineman, Matt. Because why not? Right? It didn't say that he confirmed that she was 6'1" or not. So somehow they're doing a drill. Must be like a blocking drill, I guess. And she says that she's just flat out embarrassing him. So I'm guessing they're in a 3-point stance and she's just manhandling him. And he's visibly getting frustrated, she said, so that the next play he ran at her hard and broke her leg. And she wants to she sues him for damages, and this is why I believe the entire thing. She's only asking for $50,000, Matt. Which seems like she's only asking for the legit hospital bill. It's not like one of those lawsuits where it's like, you broke my leg, $78 million. I need that. It's like, no, here's the actual bill. Here's a bunch of texts that you sent me where you said you could be a good stepdad. And how you didn't think I was actually 6'1". But she wanted in the court record that she was beating him at football drills in his yard. Which you can't make it up. He's always involved in these weird things going on, right? But this one, I think, it could be the off-season story of the year, and it's only February still. So, let me just say this, Coach. Have you ever had a kid show up at camp and you made his mom do the football drills?
That's a big negative.
Maybe you should start.
Oh, yeah, and then have half the team hurt.
Why are the team getting hurt? You would do the drills with the mom. Do you understand how the camp works?
I don't need to be getting hurt. Have a big mom running me down.
It's a good pickup line. It's like, you know, you should play offensive line. Right? Because that's a sexy position. Wonder if he gave her like a swim move. I don't even know. What are they doing in Oklahoma's? I doubt they had pads on, right? I want this to go. I want him to show up in court, and I wish it was public. Because I would 100% watch that. People like watching other court cases, like a Judge Judy with Jim Harbaugh sitting there on the bench because he's a fan of hers. And he's like the special guest where they're like, Coach, is this a drill you would do with your players? And Jim's like, nah. I don't know what you're doing there, buddy. Because they're back in the NFL, so NFL could do it as like a promo. Instead of Hard Knocks, they just have like Judge Judy. Just a special, like a Judge Judy special to like preview Hard Knocks maybe this year. Where it's like Jim Harbaugh, Judge Judy, and then it's like a couple other football buddies of his, right, on the jury. And he has to explain why he was doing the drill. And if it makes sense to do it with the player's mom standing in as the offensive lineman, then he doesn't have to pay. Do you think that would be a good show, and would you watch it?
I'm not going to say that I wouldn't watch it, but I'm not, I don't know that I would go out of my way to watch it.
If the drill made sense, would you steal it for your practices?
The drill doesn't care who steals it.
Because that's what I want. I wish they would have filmed it. Because that would have been... Oh my gosh, that would have been even better. I mean, I feel bad for her. She seems to be like just goofing around about it. But by the sounds of it, single mom just needs help with the bills. It's not like extortion or anything. It seemed like legit. If I was the judge, I'd have to roll in her favor, I think. Just for not wasting the court's time with some egregious amount. Because like they even said, they even put in the article that his house was worth $7 million. So like she could have just asked for like $5 million or something. And they probably would have gave it to her, but she's like, no, I like it. So what if they end up together? What would you think? It'd be a good story, right? How did you guys meet?
Your mom was beating me in Oklahoma, so I snapped her leg.
That would be a great story. Because, you know, everyone asks, like, how did you guys meet? It's like, yeah, football drills. They'd be like, football drills? What do you mean? Football drills? Aren't you in the NFL? What, was she, like, at spring training? Like, no, she came to my house to do them.
She came to my house, and then we mutually decided on which drills we were going to use.
Because I think...
Wouldn't be in a situation where you would try to like use your world class speed to your advantage. No, we're gonna do lineman drills.
Because it wasn't like he was teaching her angle tackling, and he's like, "You run on the sideline, I'm gonna take a good angle on you and just take you down."
He's always like National Geographic, big game hunting.
Yeah, he's like, "You want to know why they call me the cheetah?" He runs her down.
You can be the wounded gazelle.
He doesn't like running in the offseason, Matt. He wants to be 3-point stance. Maybe he was in a. Maybe he was up. He was doing her old five technique. It's like, let me just show you. Because I thought maybe she was doing like a lingerie football thing, you know? Maybe she was. But that wasn't included in what I read. And it looked like it was pretty thorough with screenshots of the text messages and everything. So, insane. NFL story of the year, I think. I don't think it would top me. You can give me any Aaron Rodgers offseason, like in a cave doing weird stuff. Don't care. That story tops. Unless Tom Brady comes back, which doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, they did say with Tom Brady... since I brought him up randomly. His purchase of the Raiders is under review. Did you see that?
No.
I don't know if it got settled, because I think it was a week ago, or a week or two, and I forgot to bring it up. They said that they Davis or whatever gave him an offer that was like much lower than what it should have been, because he was Tom Brady. And he's like, look, he's going to bring a lot to the franchise. And they're like, no. Make him pay, because now if some other owner goes to sell his team, the market value could be like, yeah, but Tom Brady got in for only this. Like, now you have to lower your value. And so they want him to pay more. And Tom has like a firm coming in, and I think they agreed to pay it. But I don't know how much they settled for or whatever. But that's held up. Oh, excuse me. The actual approval, which I was shocked by, because... they told me last year that he couldn't just come back because he was already in. And now they're saying he didn't have the proper approval. So he could have just played. Interesting.
And now the plot thickens.
Yeah. The Raiders coming in. They're talking about some big-time players. Like, didn't Ayuk want to play there? Suspicious. Ayuk wants to play there. And Devontae Adams, Tom Brady just comes out of retirement. He's like, hey, it's me. Josh Jacobs is there. Although he didn't get the franchise tag, did he?
No.
And the Chargers with Harbaugh let Neckler go. And I was thinking that Blake Corum, he was listed as like a comp for Eckler. Didn't have like the experience like out of the backfield with the hands, but like both aren't known as like burners or whatever. And some people had Blake like projected to go all the way to the 7th or undrafted, which I think would be insane. And then they talked about, like, oh, he had an injury history. I'm like, yeah, but wasn't it just like a meniscus? And he almost played through it. It wasn't like he's always been hurt. And someone said his workload, but I think he was only our main back for 2 years. So I know he's older because, like, the red shirt and stuff, but it wasn't like the year before it was Hassan Haskins. So it wasn't like him carrying all the heavy load for like 4 years at Michigan. He just ended up getting all the touchdown records or whatever because he's great at like hitting the hole, which I feel like would be a great, like, at least a third string running back. Some of these teams have guys that can't even get a yard, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if Harbaugh just randomly gets Blake and lets Eckler go. And he's like, this is a great discount. Sixth round or something like that. Because why pay for running back? Eckler did nothing last year, right? I had him on my fantasy team because he won me the championship the year before. It was his contract year. And I kept waiting for him to do something. Like, buddy, I pick guys on their contract year for a reason. That's why I kept you. I can't keep you next year because you did nothing. And then you have a new coach coming that's going to cut you? So very disappointed in him. And I bet he regrets his year he had to. Right? He's not going to get a heavy...
Or maybe it played out exactly the way he wanted it to.
What? A brand new coach and then he leaves and they could win?
Without? And then... sign with the Ravens, and they can just have like all of the running backs.
He signs with the Jets. This is what happened. He's Breece Hall's backup.
They're all just going to sign with the Ravens. They'll be like, you know what? Lamar Jackson doesn't throw the ball much. We'll just go there and we'll all just run the ball.
Yeah, but they don't really have a great running game either. So it doesn't make sense. And even Eckler... what team is going to get him the ball out of the backfield? The Steelers are going to get him. Watch it. They'll do something weird like that. Speaking of Michigan guys, they had the Steelers projected as possibly getting J.J. McCarthy, and I knew that fired you up. Why?
Because we don't need a non-quarterback taken in the first round.
Matt, he checks all the boxes as your boy Jameis. National champ. Awesome record. He has more wins. He has a better winning percentage than Jameis in college.
I would take Jameis right now to Pittsburgh over everyone.
Even Tom Brady coming back?
Yes, even old-ass Tom Brady.
For 1 year? Come on, give me a break. You'd go with the winner. You'd go Tom Brady.
Well, why would you go for 1 year?
Because he's old. He might not make it.
Yes, you're right. He's old. So the probability of winning with what they have on the roster is not even plausible.
But he has friends that come with him. Jameis has no friends. He doesn't have an entourage like Tom.
Yet.
Haven't you seen Tom Brady's beach pics?
No.
Him and the boys are still playing beach football, buddy. Did you see Miami's changing their spring break rules for the beaches, keeping it safer for the older crowd like Tom Brady is hanging out with the boys out there?
I mean, the funny thing is that Tom Brady is such an outlier I could see it influencing someone to take McCarthy early. I don't see in Harbaugh's system, what about it screams developmental quarterback? Like, hand the ball off a bunch of times, run in power, and then throw play action. That's nothing of what Pittsburgh does.
Matt,
so like
they put the projection out there. Michigan's quarterback, you dude, most production all time, Michigan quarterbacks. I feel like on that alone, you have to take a chance.
Yeah, and if you take Tom Brady out, then you're like 19th on the list. Just because one guy accounts for 99% of your stats.
Hey, they're still double. If you take Tom Brady out, even since 2000, I think the year 2000, they're still double what Ohio State is, Matt. How many quarterbacks have they had? And you've been talking about getting Fields.
I don't...
take a discount Tom Brady in JJ?
But see, I look at that scenario because it does seem like they're going to pull the trigger and make a move for Fields. And I don't, with what it's being speculated with multiple first round picks, like, I don't think that's a good move. Like, I think there's so many other glaring areas of need. And I don't know which order makes the most sense. I mean, to me, like, I look at, obviously, improving the defensive line. I mean, those guys are almost as old as me, so they probably need to start developing some youth somewhere. I would say the offensive line still has issues, that you have no run game and you have no pass protection. So regardless of who you have at quarterback, it's not going to matter unless you make that, like, a justification for trading for someone like Fields, that you know he's going to have to run for his life and he's going to be mobile enough to avoid it. And you're going to do a lot of slide protection and active ruling out. Like, I feel like Pittsburgh has done, and I think it's a preference of Tomlin, that they do more drop back passing. But it's like, if you don't change the launch point, then everyone just tees off on you. And I think that's part of the problem right now, is that, you know, they get the ball in shotgun, they drop straight back, and it's either quick screen or chuck it down the sideline. Like, there's no middle ground to it.
So, I don't know if that's going to solve all the issues. I feel like what you told me off the show, where they just need to go the old school route of going offense and defensive line and continuing to build there. They kind of already have the defensive line, so it's time to just focus on the offensive line. I mean, that's what I'm wondering if Jim's going to focus on with the Chargers, because he came in and changed the mindset of the 49ers. Because for years, people were saying, like, no, don't worry about, like, having great run blocking. And, I mean, going from, like, all the way from, like, 2000 with, like, Jeff Garcia up through whomever, like, the Niners had on the roster, like, quarterback, it didn't matter because, like, the line sucked. And they were always focused on, like, getting skill players in there. Like, hey, we need another TO to help bounce them out. Just like, Jim came in and was like, no, we're going to focus on the lines. And they've been able to continuously win, even though they pushed him out, listened to Balky over Jim. Jim was like, no, we need to keep focusing on the line. York pushed Harbaugh out. Balky came in, started to make some moves, and the Niners turned awful. And they immediately got rid of him, made the shift back to, let's keep building, like, along the lines. And now the Niners have, like, one of the best rosters. That's why I'm shocked that they can't even win a Super Bowl, because they're way more talented than the Chiefs. Are we kidding? The Chiefs are at the point where they need to focus on the line, because a lot of it's just Mahomes running for his life out there. It's like, how are they even with the 49ers D line? And the Steelers have none of that. It's never like, oh, let's see what they can come up with. The defense is good enough to where I feel like the Steelers kind of went and they're like, we're going to get an entire offensive line, but it doesn't really work like that, because then you have a bunch of guys that don't have the top end talent, where you need to get an offensive lineman high in the draft like 3 years in a row. And they haven't done that because they were getting like safeties high in the draft. It's like, why? Oh, but the linemen, they don't grade as high. We'll just get a fourth rounder. It'll be decent enough. And then their line is just decent enough. Like, that's it. Make some moves. Making a move for Fields is going to turn the Steelers into the Jets, dude. Because Fields isn't good enough to win on his own. We saw that with the Bears. Getting JJ, I'm sorry, my man, it's not going to work out because, yeah, you can make quick decisions and get out of trouble a little bit, but you're going to get torn apart. It's going to be a bad situation for both guys, I think, because they don't have the running. The running game's not built to keep the ball and be able to move in short down situations. They just can't do it. So you're going to be relying on the quarterback like that. And like to your point, you're going to expose yourself to more hits. And once you start getting hit more, that's it, right? You're done.
Well, and I think you brought up a good point with bringing up the way Harbaugh went after that Niners build, because one of the things that he did was they had stockpiled a bunch of early round draft picks, and they had drafted a lot of really high valued guys early on, and they stocked the offensive line to where it built them for long term success. That I do think it felt like Pittsburgh was trending in that direction. And one of the reasons that, you know, I half joke about bringing Jameis in is the fact that I feel like of the quarterbacks that are out there, he's one that no one's going to pay any serious attention to. But I do think, given the right circumstances, he could be successful. And I feel like with what Tomlin wants to do offensively, it pairs really well to what Jameis's skill set is tailored towards. Like, he wants that big arm. Like, when you look at the way Roethlisberger played, tell me it's any different than what you see from Jameis. Drop back, scramble around, bounce off a bunch of defenders, and just chuck it up there. Like, same style. And they're both bigger quarterbacks that are built for taking the beating. And Winston has shown that he can win in a two-minute situation with a national championship on the line. So he can handle those high-pressure situations.
Yeah, so can JJ, dude. National champ. That's what I'm saying. You got to have that. Fields didn't have that.
But Jameis didn't have – he didn't have Connor Stallions there telling him what the plays are going to be.
JJ didn't have that either for the playoffs, man.
Yeah, the scouting report was already in.
He was a fan at those games. Because
the work was already done. That's like when you do your homework, you get to go have fun on the weekend. He already had the reports in.
Yeah, see, I forgot. Like, I'm looking back through some of these draft picks, and you're right. The Niners did get a bunch of, like, the one year they had DeForest Buckner and Josh Garnett, like, guard and defensive end. I think that was after Harbaugh went to Michigan and they brought in, they got rid of, like, whatever. Like, they got right back to getting DNs and just, like, all defensive guys and then tackles. Like, in 2018, getting tackles. But there were a lot of moves where they were, like, getting multiple, like, fourth-round picks and third-round picks. But, like, getting, like, even going back to, like, where they were doing, like, Joe Staley, some of that before was even, like, a little bit before Harbaugh, where they, like, they looked like they had a mind shift around, like, when did they get, they got Alex Smith, and then the next year they got Vernon Davis, and then Patrick Willis, and they got Crabtree in 09, and then that's when they shifted in 2010. So it was a little bit before Harbaugh got there. Was Harbaugh there already? I don't remember what year he got there. If that would have been the first draft for his, or if it would have been the next year when they got Kaepernick. Because, like, they were taking guys like Alden Smith that were, like, projects with, like, off-the-field issues, and they were trying to, like, save him with, like, 100 million chances. Because I remember that. But a lot of his stuff was defense, tight ends, and tackles, and offensive linemen, centers, third round. Like, they're getting everyone high, and that's kind of like what the Steelers, I don't think they've been getting. I'm going to see if I can bring it up, because that's the one thing that, like, it's one thing to say, hey, we're focused on the run, and then to go into the draft and don't have that. So they had the offensive lineman last year. Then they went all defense. They get another lineman in the seventh. Before that, it was Pickett. They got two quarterbacks with Pickett. And then two wide receivers that year. And a tight end. And a linebacker and a D tackle. The year before, they got a couple linemen in 2021. In the mid rounds. That's kind of like a Niner strategy. But they went Najee Harris first round and a tight end second round. Friermuth, which have kind of worked out. But then the year before, Claypool in the first round, like, they're drafting like the Lions. You know how many wide receivers they have in the first two picks the last couple years? James Washington, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, tight end Friermuth, George Pickens.
Because I am told that Deontay Johnson is an elite top five receiver. So we have a top five. Continue.
But people laugh about the Lions getting guys. That's five receivers in the top two picks. Counting Friermuth as one the last couple years. And then another one was Najee Harris. And they had the safety. They had Devin Bush, which unfortunately his injury kind of ruined him, which you can't really count on injuries or whatever. But then they had Benny Snell, which I thought was a good pick in like the middle round. But again, no line help. Cornerback, linebacker. They only had like the one draft where they got the two guys. That was it. Two linemen don't make your line. They can't be just getting guys in the seventh round. It's not going to work out. And I don't even know where they're getting the rest of them. Fifth round or below. You know how many? They've drafted so many wide receivers. It's almost ridiculous looking at. Like going back to 2014. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Like when you look at that James Washington pick, though, that like to me, I feel like that wasn't terrible. And I think had they adjusted more with Mason Rudolph, that would have paid out, I thought, better, because they would have had that college connection of working together and just kind of continuing to build on that rapport. Like I felt like that was a scenario that was kind of setting them up for success, and it just never fully came to fruition.
But see, that's the one thing. I'm going back through these. I could be wrong on my count here, Matt. But it looks like they've had... What is this? Over the past 10 years, all right, it looks like they've had like 9 or 10 wide receivers to... What is it going to be? 7 or 8 offensive linemen? And that's 5 positions. Oh, and I meant to miss one. It might have been the exact same. They've drafted the exact same amount, maybe, wide receivers as they have offensive linemen over the last decade. That's insane. That might be the biggest shock we've ever heard. Like, they only had enough over the past decade to go too deep at one of the most important positions, but yet they've had how many wide receivers that just don't, like, why? Why are you doing that? I almost wonder, because I didn't prepare this before, I don't want to just be going through old drafts from other teams, but like I almost wonder if there's a shift for the Lions too like that. Because I told you before, the Niners were doing the same kind of thing where they're getting like Crabtree and like Vernon Davis and a bunch of other high draft pick receivers and stuff, which kind of worked out. But like their strategy now, like what wide receivers are they getting kind of high? They just kind of like hit on weird guys like Deebo Samuel that didn't have a position, right? It's like, oh, you're a running back / wide receiver, all right. And then it kind of works out. And then they bring in McCaffrey through like free agency. I feel like those guys are always going to be kind of available. Like even Juju, when the Chiefs landed on him, he wasn't getting top dollar, but he was still good enough to make an impact in the Super Bowl because he had like a chip on his shoulder. So that kind of just is crazy to me. But it makes sense, man, why they can't run the ball or get pass protection. Need to go back to... I don't even know. They're not even spending big money, I don't think, on the line. That's insane. But that's where we're at with the combine. I think I had on the show notes that Michigan had the most players invited to the combine of all time with 18. Ahead of, like, I think LSU, the Joe Burrow year, was second. What surprised me, though, is Georgia has the record for the most players drafted, I think, from last year. And they weren't even on the top 5, maybe, of teams that had players at the combine. So that means they just had players drafted off the strength of what, their team last year? Because how would you get more players drafted that were even than were even at the combine? But that's kind of crazy, I think. And I don't think that's sustainable for Georgia.
I guess it is plausible, though. If you're going so deep in certain spots that...
Because, like, they had 15 players drafted. They were 14 at the combine last year, looking it up. Michigan has 18. That LSU team had 16. There were a couple teams with 14. It looks like the NFL updated this because it was not on there before. I guess the combine started in like 2003, right? Or something like that. Because it surprised me that Michigan is on the list twice. In 2017, they had 14 people on there with Harbaugh. And I don't think that 17 team was like really good. I think that was a 9-win team. But when you're just bringing in 100 linemen, right? That's the thing that works. That's what the NFL kind of needs. That's what I'm wondering, if there's going to be more of a shift to that kind of pro style. But the way they're bringing in the young coaches, I wonder how many of them are really going to have that backbone. I mean, realistically, you still need a game-breaking quarterback, or your team is going to have a very slim chance of winning the Super Bowl. That's why there's only one Trent Dilfer for like however many Tom Brady's and Patrick Mahomes, right? If you look through the Super Bowl list, too, Brad Johnson. How many other one-offs?
Don't dog Florida State national champ.
Brad Johnson.
Brad Johnson, Seminole. Matt, Super Bowl champ.
I'm not dogging him. More Super Bowl success than any Ohio State quarterback. I put credit where it's due, right? I'm still waiting because, like, I look at Pitt too. It always makes me laugh, like with Pitt having 100 players on the list of like quarterback production. Because some Ohio State guy was when they were putting out the stats for like the quarterback U, and they were like, "It's all Tom Brady, it's all Tom Brady." Then they go through the list. It's like a bunch of random guys like Garbeck, and like even Jim Harbaugh had stats since 2000. He was around that long, which made me laugh. But recently, yeah, Michigan hasn't put guys in. So it'll be interesting to see how JJ did, because I think Rudock was the only recent quarterback that had any NFL stats from Michigan, where Ohio State has guys coming in every year. So it's surprising that they don't have at least one breakthrough. They could have had it with Burrow, but he counts for LSU. Because like Mallett played at Michigan, but he counted for, where did he transfer to, Arkansas or something like that?
Yeah.
So... that's the one thing, because like USC has guys coming in too, and they never really pan out. And then they're going through a weird coaching change. Did we talk about Chip Kelly leaving UCLA too? Because he just gave up, right?
Well, I felt like the pressure was on him at UCLA. Like there was talk of him possibly getting fired from there anyhow.
Because I'm looking to see, I want to make sure that before we go to college, because that's more of a college shift. Do you have anything else for the NFL you want to talk about?
Nah.
Because I want to make sure we get to the Florida State lawsuit stuff that we talked about last week, because there were some new developments there. But one of the things, piggybacking, because UCLA is in the Big Ten now, and they're trying to push Chip Kelly out, or there was rumblings that he might be on a shortened leash. He came out and was fired up about like NIL deals, saying like it's not sustainable. He just wants to go back to coaching. And with Bill O'Brien getting the head coaching job, I think at Boston College, right? Chip Kelly just gave up and went to Ohio State as their offensive coordinator, which is a total shift. So they went from Ryan Day's like passing offense to Bill O'Brien's pro style to now Chip Kelly's. Where do they even run? Like a run spread? Is he still running that? I mean, I guess they did have a lot more passing recently with a DTR at UCLA. But even then, it was like such a weird shift for Ohio State to have, where it's almost not like hey, Ryan Day is like, it's not like I have an identity. This is what I want to run. Because like for everybody that makes fun of James Franklin, Penn State's offense kind of looks the same no matter who's running it, right? It's frustrating. It doesn't make any sense. And people are like, because I was talking to a Penn State buddy of mine, and he was like breaking down, saying like, Joe Moorhead, because I was high on Joe Moorhead for years, right? And I was saying that, then he kind of flamed out. And then they're telling me that Joe Moorhead basically ran the same, like the stats are kind of the same, whether he was there or not. The difference was basically like Saquon Barkley had more yards after contact than like what Penn State hasn't had forever. So like the difference in that offense was Saquon Barkley himself, like one guy. And after watching Blake Corum, like injured Michigan, like when he was injured and like for a couple games, Michigan's offense was totally different. When he's back and he can get you 2 yards a pop, different game. That's why I would be shocked if Blake didn't get drafted, just because in the NFL, if you need guys that can get you 3 or 4 yards a carry, that's what they need. They don't need every running back to be a game breaker. So maybe he can't break them, but some guys are able to just keep churning away and getting yards and getting yards. I feel like the NFL has a place for a guy like that, at least for a couple of years. So when they put the Penn State offense in, that's the one thing I'm looking at with Ryan Day. He's saying, I don't have an identity. I don't really know what I'm doing. I just don't want to do the offense anymore. And I'm going to bring in Bill O'Brien. Probably could have worked, but like their entire offense is all like high rated wide receivers, right? And they do have some high rated running backs, but they really haven't used them. So I was curious to see how Bill O'Brien was going to use them. I felt like they tried to do the Michigan thing a little bit last year, where they slowed it down in that Michigan game and ran it down our throats that one drive. And then they were like, that's not us. Just kidding. Not going to do that.
And I've said before with Ohio State, like their recruiting is always at a relatively high level, that you would think if you're essentially handpicking who your recruits are for your team, that you just build it to just overpower people. And I feel like with some of the zone schemes that they're running, the outside zone, like they're these longer developing plays.
Yeah, they are.
But it doesn't make sense to try to run those when you can just have these bigger, stronger guys and just run it right down their face.
Well, there's the one highlight where they had Henderson? They try to do that really long, like drawn out pass to the flat, and Sanders still just lights them up. It's in like every Michigan highlight reel. And that's one of the plays where it's almost like, why is the play taking forever to get that guy just killed? Because that could have been like, if he would have broke his leg or something on that play. It's just like, why are you running that? You have the guys. Just line up and win every battle. I don't understand it. Because it's the same as like, early in the game, try to get the ball to Marvin Harrison. They kind of did a couple different things with that. But now he's gone. And even though you have a bunch of 5-star receivers, it's rare to have a guy that can game break. That's why I'm looking at Xavier Worthy at Texas and it's like, damn, could you imagine him with like Roman Wilson at Michigan? I know Michigan won the championships. It's not like, oh, they're going to win it better. Like, you can't win it better. But it would have been awesome to just have another game breaking guy like Blake Corum of the receiving crew. But Roman Wilson, he did so good at the Senior Bowl that it might not matter. But like Marvin Harrison was that guy, and they didn't have like a Robin. Like they just had the Batman. And that was it. Right? And when you have that many high recruits, I feel like, where's the other guys? And going to Chip Kelly, I think, is going to be such a shift that I'm curious to see how it works out for them. They have 100 quarterbacks coming in, so they'll be transferring out. I've been waiting to see how, because Michigan's transfer portal has closed from the Harbaugh thing. So some of the stress is over. Only Saab, one of the nickelback, like I think he was going to take Sanders Still's place. So it's kind of a loss, but he wasn't one of the top DBs. He was the only guy that left, went to Alabama. There are rumors, because I know you text me and I forgot to text you back, but there were rumors that Alabama had reached out to a bunch of Michigan guys, which is funny because Ohio State just self-reported that they've been reaching out to transfers before they're able to before they're in the portal. And they said, oh, we thought we saw a social media post about them leaving. It's like, what kind of defense is that? But of course, nothing will happen there, right? So I'm almost wondering with the Big Ten coming in now, because the Florida State lawsuit, let's hit that real quick. Because I'm done with the Michigan stuff. This will be a weird year because I don't even know how hype I am coming in. I'm more excited about the Big Ten teams coming in. And the one thing that I've been saying for a while is I think Florida State is on the path to being one of the next Big Ten teams. Comes out, they have the college football playoff meeting. We talked about that last week. Now there's rumors that they might want to push the playoff to be expanded in 2026, which would line up with Florida State leaving the ACC. So the ACC went to court, accused with ESPN, keep in mind, because that's the big key detail. They accused Florida State of a felony for leaking trade secrets, and ESPN is doing everything they can to make Florida State not leak their documents. I find it hard to believe that ESPN is going to be fighting this battle in court and then off the record be like, Florida State, our old buddies, come on over to the SEC. Because they're the only network involved with the SEC now. So it's not like Florida State can get approached by like CBS or someone else, right? All the other networks are in on the Big Ten. And I said, I was kind of skeptical about how ESPN was able to lock in the college football playoffs. Now there's rumors that the Big Ten might go to four pods, like I've been saying. It's the only thing that makes sense, if we're being honest. And they're talking about having their championship weekend be the first round of the playoffs. My only thing that my only worry with that is that if you have that, you're kind of eliminating your own teams. They said that they're looking for more access. So it looks like what my hope was on the show is that some of the smaller conferences play like a play-in game. And it looks like what the Big Ten might be suggesting is that exact scenario where, hey, Mac in Conference USA, why don't you play, have your champions play while we're doing our regional four pod playoff games. So like you put your rivals in a pod and then you rotate the pods is how it makes the most sense. So like the Michigan and Ohio State game, you're not losing that value. That's what they keep bringing up. And I've been saying this going into this year, Michigan and Ohio State could be the top two teams again this year. The Big Ten does not want a rematch that could potentially eliminate one of their teams from the playoffs. Because, like, let's play this out last year. Last year, Michigan beats Ohio State at home by 6 points. Ohio State's still ranked in the top eight or whatever. In the 12-team playoff, if Michigan had to play them the next week in the Big Ten championship game and Michigan beats them again, Ohio State most likely isn't getting an at-large bid. Right? Because there'll be another one-loss team or whomever they're kind of there getting that next bit. Does that make sense? If I'm explaining it good? So the Big Ten doesn't want their two top teams playing each other back-to-back weeks. Because like, what if there's a scenario where like 2016 Michigan-Ohio State where Michigan loses to Iowa because Spate got hurt. So they lose to Iowa. And then they go to Ohio State, they go to double overtime, and they lose. That could potentially eliminate Michigan. But what if Michigan had won that first game, Ohio State beats them in the rematch, and then still eliminates them? So I think what they're trying to do is come up with a system where they don't have the rematch. And the best way to do that is to just have pods. I was thinking three, because then you can have an at-large. What I've been hearing from the Big Ten side, and I haven't really seen this talked about, is going back to the COVID, I think I mentioned it last week, where you have a championship weekend. You have the champs from each pod. They play for like the automatic bid spot in the playoff, right? So like, let's say, for simplicity's sake, last year it would have been Michigan versus Washington. no rematch, because they're trying not to do rematches. And the way that works, you would play your other pod. So like last year works, it kind of like the Pac-12 was one pod. They didn't play Michigan and Ohio State's pod. So the Michigan and Washington would play. Whoever wins that gets the bye, and they're kind of in the Elite Eight or whatever it would be in the playoffs. The final, it wouldn't be the Final Four. I think it'd be the Elite Eight. So then they're going to have the other two champs play, which would have been, what, Penn State in the East and Iowa in the West or whatever. Penn State wins that one. They're trying to say Penn State deserves an auto bid. I don't think they're going to get a bye. I wonder if that gets rid of the byes completely. And the Iowa-Penn State game just becomes the first round of the playoffs, right? Because in a 16-team playoff, Michigan and Washington play, it's not really for the bye. The winner just goes to the Elite Eight. I don't know if Washington gets eliminated, because that's the weird scenario here. What's going to happen to the team that loses? Are they out of the playoffs, or can they somehow backdoor into another spot? Because Washington was undefeated. So do they really want... did Penn State have two losses last year? Do they really want Penn State playing in a lesser matchup, getting the bid? Right? Because like, I don't understand how they're going to do two auto bids. Unless you just have two conference champs somehow. But like, that's a real scenario where Penn State could win the East. Iowa wins the Midwest. They don't have top records. But that's kind of where they're pushing, where they want access for some of the lower teams like Iowa to be able to get into the playoffs. And I agree, they need to have the path. Because right now it's looking like it's only going to be the heavyweights getting in. And even if you're in a different conference and you're heavyweight, like Florida State, they could still make up some BS reason and try to keep you out. And that's what's sad. As a football fan, that's sad for me. Because I've talked about it. Michigan won the national championship. If everything played out the same, and the only difference was Michigan played Florida State instead of Bama, they would have had two undefeated teams that they beat in the playoff run, but they wouldn't have got the SEC champ. Would people have legitimized their playoff or tried to say, well, they didn't have to play anyone from the SEC? Of course they won, right? And so, like, are people going to be making that decision in the future? Like, oh, we're not going to put Clemson in. They're the second place ACC. We really should put Missouri in. Or, like, we should really put in Ole Miss, like a team that hasn't traditionally made the playoffs but have maybe had a good season in the SEC. Did they squeeze them in instead? Because that's a real scenario that could happen. And so I'm wondering, if they stop at 14 teams in the playoff, is that just giving the second championship game an auto bid? So like last year, like the scenario would have been, let's say Penn State plays Washington instead, and Michigan played Iowa just like it. Does that mean Penn State and Washington both would have got in if Penn State would have beat them? Like, I don't understand how they're going to get, like, is that championship game count as a playoff, or is it only count for an auto bid and the loser can still get in? That's what I want answered. Because, like, last year for the SEC, they could have had the two teams that didn't play. It makes more sense for them, like Ole Miss and Missouri, they get to play a play-in game. But why would they get that, right?
Right.
Because to me, that would just, as a casual fan, I would be annoyed. Because the only other way I'm thinking is if they have the conference, like the lower conferences play, but it doesn't really count as a playoff game, and it counts as like championship weekend game, to where the winner of the MAC and Conference USA, then they get in the playoffs. But that play-in game is kind of like how the NCAA tournament doesn't officially count it as a real game. It's like on that Monday or whatever before the tournament.
But see, I feel like with the way that you're already describing some of this, is it's like, well, we have to have X number of players from this conference. There has to be this many bids from this conference. You know, I guess I almost want to go back to like a BCS-esque model where whatever the criteria is that they're going to have for identifying, and like, I hate that. Well, we have these judges, and they're gonna make their own. Like, it's so individualized that there's not there's not a specific criteria that's saying this is what gets you in.
So this is what gets my thought on it. UMass is going to join the MAC in 2026, which is when these changes are supposed to be made. Army's going to the American if they haven't already. And New Mexico State and Liberty, I think, went to Conference USA last year, correct?
Yeah.
So there's only two teams left that are independent. It's going to be UConn and Notre Dame. UConn 100% is going to go to a conference. It's looking like it's going to be the ACC, because the first thing I saw down here in ACC country is, hey, when Florida State leaves, we have some great options to add to replace them. And I'm like, UConn would not move the needle for the ACC, but it would kind of lead to that discussion where maybe you have, there's 10 conferences right now. Maybe the other six conferences, or like, I don't even know if the Big Ten and the SEC, maybe they just don't play in that opening round. They play each other, like I've been saying. Like, so all eight conferences that are left, the Big 12, ACC, Conference USA, MAC, Sun Belt, Western Conference or whatever. I don't even know what the other one is. Maybe it's just the Mountain West now, or the West Coast Conference or whatever. So I think there should be, because the Pac-12 left, unless I'm wrong on my numbers, I thought there were 10 conferences left. Maybe there's less. But so you pull the Big Ten and the SEC out, that's eight conferences left. What if they played each other in the first round of the playoffs to get that number down to four, right? Their champs all played to get four teams to then play the best Big Ten and the SEC teams, where you have four conference champs from the remaining four. Most likely it would be the ACC champ and the Big 12 champ, and then a mix of whomever they play. Because it's kind of like a benefit to the ACC, like, hey, Florida State, for right now we're using them because last year. Hey, you get the benefit, you get to play Boise State or whatever. Not Boise State, Bowling Green. Did they win last year? I thought there was a team that had eight wins that won. Like, Florida State would have got to play them in the first round, and then Florida State would have got the nod for the second round. But the Big Ten and the SEC, they have their own four-team playoff, which is kind of like their own conference champs. That's what I'm saying. If they do two pods, and then whatever the lineup, however they decide it, is it going to be one and two for the one seed and the two seed, or is it going to be like one versus four? So last year it would have been Michigan versus Iowa, and then Washington plays Penn State, and that's the four teams, and like Ohio State's just out because of whatever reason. But then they were talking about at large, so I don't know how that's going to work. Like, are they just going to get rid of the at large, or is there going to be a separate? Because the way I'm talking about it now, you would have 16 teams from like the other conferences, or no, you'd have eight.
So you'd have eight from the Big Ten, seven from the SEC, and Florida State. That would be your playoff.
Well, no, they're talking about limiting the numbers down, and so I think if the numbers are right in my head, you would have eight teams coming from the Big Ten and the SEC, right? Or maybe it should be like eight teams or whatever. And then you would have the eight teams from the other conferences, right? And then they would just play each other to pare it down to four and then four or whatever. And then that would be the rest of it. Like, those teams would be, you basically lock in two Big Ten and two SEC teams every year in the Elite Eight against the other conferences. Which might be a good scenario. I never thought of it like that. Force the other smaller conferences to play a play-in game against each other to basically eliminate them and guarantee your conference gets two teams through. That way the regular season keeps mattering, because like last year, Ohio State wouldn't have made it. I'm assuming the Penn State's in a separate division. Just letting Ohio State fans know, if you're following my logic, Penn State would be in the East. All right, I'm not throwing Florida State in there because, like, we don't know how that would have went. But we'll just say Penn State's in the East. They would play Washington from the West because Washington would have finished number two I would assume they would go by the poll ranking, right? Iowa would have been in that Midwest pod, and then the Mideast pod with Michigan, or the Great Lakes pod is what people have been calling it with Ohio State and them. Michigan beats Ohio State, which eliminates Ohio State from the playoffs. So regular season matters. That game was the most watched game last year. Could you imagine if it being any higher, if that was kind of a pre-playoff game? Then Michigan gets rewarded by playing Iowa instead of Washington because they were the one seed. They beat Iowa. They're in the playoffs. Washington beats Penn State. They're in. And then the SEC would have had Alabama and Texas. So it was almost like the real playoffs. They just kind of cut all the other guys out. Right? Awesome. That's the future. Because I'm assuming they're going to have it split like just in the NCAA tournament where the top dogs don't have to play each other till the final round. So in theory, you could have had Michigan play whatever the lowest team. Florida State in that scenario probably would have got to play Bama as their play-in game, right? Georgia would have been eliminated losing to Bama in that game. Bama's reward is playing undefeated Florida State. And then the rest is history. Would you have liked that better?
I mean, if you're the premise that the committee had outlined was that going on an undefeated Power Five conference champ gets in. And that's been where the center focus of my rage is. Take the injury out, take everything else off the table. You're undefeated. You've won all your games, regardless of who's there. You deserve a chance, whether it's right or it's wrong. Just like, you know, I looked at it similarly. I looked at Liberty playing Oregon. And you can look at the game now in hindsight and say, oh, they got blown out. They had no business playing Oregon in a New Year's Six bowl game. But they were undefeated. They won every game on their schedule, and it ended up being a lopsided matchup. But that's not to say that definitively, with that option style that Chadwell runs, that Oregon was going to blow the doors off them. They could have easily laid an egg in that. Like, it's easy to see, to sit back and look at it in hindsight. You know, people point out, oh, Florida State got throttled by Georgia, but it was a shell of a game, and the people that complain the hardest about it are the ones that just have the hardest time understanding that when you have such a high percentage of your team opting out because it was a meaningless bowl game at that point, like, you lose all those talking points. And they try to make it relevant, but like, oh, see, you didn't deserve to be in because you got blown out by Georgia. It was like, yeah, but Georgia lost their opportunity when they lost a game. You know, it's a completely different scenario.
See, well, now, looking at this, because I'm trying to do the count, it looks like my 10 conferences left was still counting the Pac-12, so I think there might only be 9, which makes it even easier, because that would be 7 conferences, and then if they somehow played each other and then gave the Big Ten and the SEC another extra championship week, you could in theory have all conferences included, which I think is what they're trying to get to. If the conferences keep eating each other, because like they're getting bigger and then the ACC has to, so like I'm thinking there's going to be 8 conferences left and we go to just a 16 team conference, like for my health in the sport, like my love of the sport, for it to stay healthy, we'll say that.
Well, it's definitely in danger right now.
But it makes the most sense if they just go to 8 auto bids and then 8 at large. If you try to do a forced, because like that scenario I laid out, that's not my idea. That's what the committee made it sound like the Big Ten and the SEC are going for, where they get 8 teams locked in no matter what. And then all the other conferences only get 1, right? And then heck, in that scenario, maybe like the ACC and the Big 12 have 1 extra chance to get another at large. Right, you take, or honestly, it might be Notre Dame. Right? It might be the seven conferences plus Notre Dame slash the highest ranked at large from the other conferences on the other side. And then you kind of mix it in, but they're kind of forcing UConn to join the ACC or the whatever, the American or just something to get in. Most likely the Big 12 was after them. Houston's ranked number one in basketball, or they were. So you could have Houston, UConn, Baylor has won a championship, I think. Texas Tech was in there. That'd be a hell of a good basketball conference, Ed. So having them kind of balance with the ACC, I think that's what they're trying to position themselves as, is saying, hey, we're big. We're going to go as big as what the Big Ten and the SEC are. And I think that's going to help the Big Ten and the SEC out. Because with them doing that, they're killing the smaller conferences. So every time a smaller conference gets killed, they're saying, one less auto bid. One less auto bid, we're giving everyone access, but you're only really getting the champ from that other conference. Where, how far do you go, right? Because these aren't even the updated list for next year. Because like the MAC might have 12 or 14 or whatever, but some of those conferences were getting kind of small. So we'll have to reconvene closer whenever some of these lists get finalized for the future. Because I'm thinking that if there's nine conferences, they do a 16-team playoff right now. Because if they go to 14-team playoff, they're saying, what, seven auto bids with four of them going to the Big Ten and the SEC, and then the other three are the other conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, and then whatever other conferences left. But if they can do some hot kind of play-in game between Conference USA and like the MAC and then the Sun Belt and the American, that's two more teams that technically are in the playoffs, but they're eliminating each other, right? Like basketball.
Yeah.
So they can say, hey, we're playing, and use it as a play-in game. Because I've been saying that all along. If I'm a fan of, say, like Army, they're joining a conference. If Army's in a play-in game against, hell, I think, like, whatever, Air Force, are they in the same conference or are they in a different conference? Like, could you have that be a scenario where it's like Army versus Air Force as a play-in game to the playoffs? I think a ton of people would watch that, right? You could also get other crazy games like App State versus I don't even know, like, what are these, some of the other ones that have been bigger, like Liberty or someone that could be a great play-in game early in the day on Saturday. And then you have that game first.
Even at this point, you're looking at it more from the standpoint of, like, the ratings people, the conference media, where you're like...
That's what they're trying to do, dude.
But I know, but what I'm... And I feel like... This is everything that I'm hating about the current process, is that it's not being generated off of on-field performance. It's who do we think will, then why don't we just name it? Notre Dame gets the number one spot, Alabama 2, Georgia 3, go Michigan, Ohio State.
Well, see, that's where I think
we'll throw USC on there.
That's why I think the other conferences are really going to put themselves in a corner, because it sounds like they're agreeing to having a play-in game against themselves, where like they're saying, like, we'll be the sacrificial lamb. Pac-12 is on Friday. God, we'll play. Last year would have been what, SMU versus Liberty on Friday night. The winner of that game moves on to play Michigan. And then maybe Liberty gets boat raced like they did against Oregon and Michigan crushes them, but it doesn't matter. Because they collect their paycheck, and SMU wouldn't have been upset because they had their chance and they blew it against Liberty, you know, right? So that's where, like, I think they're trying to say, right now in the current system, we have no chance. We're not getting in. Toledo, were they the champ, or was Miami, Ohio the champ? Like, whoever was the champ in that conference, no chance of getting the playoff. But if they win the conference and they can somehow get another matchup against, like, the winner of the Mountain West, Boise State, and they beat him because Boise, maybe it was Boise State that wasn't that good that won the conference. They had 8 wins. So, like, Michigan would have played Boise State, probably just ran them out of the building, and then no one would have cared because it's kind of like a warm-up game for Michigan. But to get there, Boise State would have had to upset Miami of Ohio or Liberty, right? That would have just been the matchup. Actually, it probably would have been Boise State versus Florida State because it seems like they want to keep that side separate where the ACC plays the worst of the other conference champs. And then the Big 12 would have been there. Or no, I guess Texas would have been from the Big 12. But we're pretending they're in the SEC already. So like maybe it would have been Texas playing them. It depends who would have been ranked higher. Florida State was the other higher team, right? Yeah. So it would have been Oklahoma State playing SMU. Okay, awesome. Would a lot of people watch that game? Maybe. It's a playoff game, right? You do the bracket. And you're like, all right, I got this picked. You had the weird Big Ten quarter. And then they just reseed everybody for the second round, right? Because if they go to neutral site games, it doesn't matter what the seeding is. Because it's kind of like you just get picked, right? It'll suck for the fans. But if they keep that extra week in there for travel, they play that opening round where it's all conference champs and then the Big Ten and the SEC play their like quarterfinals or whatever. And then they just get to go. Like the quarterfinals are now, I don't know how they would declare a conference champ. You'd have a lot of co-champs again, I guess. Nebraska would be happy. That's the only way they'd get one. Right?
Takes one to know one.
Penn State's like, we're back on the table, baby. From Franklin time. Heck, they'd only have to beat one. Actually, they wouldn't even have to beat Michigan or Ohio State if they end up playing like the Midwestern pod. That would be the Penn State motto. Every time we play Wisconsin, their pod, we're going to be in the playoffs, baby. Every time we play Oregon or USC or the other pod with Michigan and Ohio State, we're not in the playoffs. But we'll be third. That'd be their motto. Because I think that's how it would work. They'd have to play during the regular season, right? So they would kind of know who the champ is for scheduling. Because I'm saying there's 16 pods, and this is getting deep. I might have to do a video. But like, let's say the 16 Midwest or Great Lakes pod last year was in the sixth, like the 16 East. The teams aren't all there. But like at the end of the year, Penn State would have been playing that pod all year. So even though Penn State won the East, they had also lost already to Michigan and Ohio State because that's the crossover division. So Michigan wouldn't have had to play Penn State again because they had already beaten them. So they would have got whoever the worst team was. Or I guess, I mean, that's what I'm wanting to see what they say. Do they want it to be them versus Washington? Or do they want to do a crossover where Michigan was ranked number one? They have to play Iowa. And then Washington plays Penn State. And if they both win, they're co-champs. But they're putting the best two teams in the playoffs, right? Because I don't think they really want the top two teams to play in a potential elimination game and then rewarding Iowa and Penn State that lost in the, like, theoretically, right? Because that's the one thing that I don't get.
I mean, to me, I like having the system spelled out and not having as limited amount of gray area as possible before you have an opportunity to have your biases take effect. I would rather it just be, and you know, they've always showed at the end of the year where the BCS rankings are and where that fits teams, because it took some of that strength of schedule and quality wins and all that stuff, like it factored that into that equation, that it just seemed like with the BCS formula the only issue was that there was still that one and two were there, but three could have made as much of a case with this, like it was building towards where we're at. I feel like finding that common ground where you're using some of the formulas that it takes the bias out, and eliminates what happened to Florida State from happening to any other team, because it was, to me, it was a travesty, and it ruined part of the game that you're saying, win it on the field, win it on the field, win and you're in. And then you don't have at least the opportunity to play for it. Stings, because it's taken away everything that you're saying you should be working toward. And now it just becomes a matter of, like, and it triggered back to the original point, was that Florida State looked at where they're at with their conference and they're in a no-win situation. So why pay $500 million to get out when you should be able to pay a fraction of that? And that's what the ongoing battle is in the ACC right now, because they're trying to prove that there's the ACC wasn't acting in their best interest. They have these television deals that are crap. And even while the Big Ten and SEC are going neck and neck, the ACC was negotiating with trying to keep Raycom involved and saying, well, we'll take less just so that you keep Raycom as part of this package. And so they were like, everybody else was negotiating for these bigger contracts, and now you have these TV deals that drastically affects the ACC, because now you have a school like Florida State that has some of the structure in place, but they're looking at, you know, $50, $60 million difference from schools in the Big Ten and the SEC, because it's not a level playing field. And when you're looking at the amount of money that athletes right now are being projected to be taking with these new NIL deals, if you're not bringing $150,000 to the table, kiss a five-star recruit goodbye, because you don't stand a chance. They'll go where the money is, and you may stand a chance to rebound them in a year or two, when they've exhausted whatever financial opportunities are at the school that they commit to that has that money. And I think that's why you're seeing this push of coaches possibly looking to jump to the NFL. You know, I think that's one of the things with Harbaugh going to the NFL. Why would you deal with all the headache of, I'm recruiting this kid that could leave in a year, so how do you factor your roster knowing 50, 60% could be gone to the portal within a year, and you're constantly flipping some of these recruits trying to get it under control? So, I mean, it's created a multiple level Pandora's box, because now not only are you looking at which conferences are going to get preferential treatment, which is going to affect your recruiting, but then you also can see, well, which ones are going to pay more? Well, the two mega conferences that are paying out $50, $60, $70 million a year, they're going to be able to provide more resources than a school that's only getting split in a pot of $30 million. And to the ESPN right now, they're having the availability of Florida State that was playing in some high market games, and they're not having to pay them for it. So I mean, for them, it's in their interest to try to keep Florida State on the hook. Because if they leave to the SEC, now you're paying more for something you're already getting on the cheap. So they have a vested interest to try to keep them contained in the ACC.
But see, that's where I think the conference is pushing are to kind of eliminate the scenario where it seems like the smaller conferences are just trying to take the lesser of two evils, where they will go to a smaller, is how they've termed it, a smaller 8-team playoff. But in actuality, it's more like a 16-team playoff. And they're going to go ahead and give the SEC and the Big Ten four chances, like four teams in the 8-team playoff. Because now, instead of them being left out every year, like the ACC with Florida State being left out, I think they're trying to say, well, at least we can kind of get in, right? We'll have a team have a 50% chance, and there's no way we're losing to like the West Coast Conference or the Mountain West champ, right? There's no way Florida State loses that game. So we're in, And then if we win the championship, like Clemson was able to do a couple times, like Florida State back in the BCS era, if we're able to win it, then it doesn't even matter. Because then we don't have to pay. We're not paying as much for our rosters, right? Because we're in the lower, lesser conference. Let the other ones pay for all the top recruits. Let them eliminate each other. And then all we have to do is just catch lightning and win the championship like Clemson was able to do. Because they weren't recruiting top 10 back then. That came after. So that's where I want to see what they're trying to think. Because what they don't want to do is let the Big Ten have a championship showcase where they have four games that weekend and everyone gets a second chance. Because that's what I'm thinking the Big Ten and the SEC are pushing for. And the one I was saving for last, I know we're like way over time. But I think when they go to a 14-team model, they're saying, oh, we are going to have Michigan play Washington for the conference championship. And they're whoever wins that's getting the bye. That's why we're not having a 16-team playoff. But you better best believe that Washington's getting an at-large. And then the winner of Penn State and Iowa's getting that other at-large. And then maybe Ohio State's also going to get an at-large, buddy. Because they're there. And they get to play, who knows, Oregon? So then you're throwing another matchup between, they didn't even win their divisions, right? Oregon lost to Washington, Ohio State lost to Michigan. But they get to play a game, and that's a top 10 game. So of course the winner of that game got to be in the playoff, Matt. You got to have them. Because the conference is so big. So then that's what I think the other conferences got to be careful. If they don't have it spelled out where whatever the Big Ten and the SEC decide, their four champs or four teams that they're putting in the playoffs, awesome. They play each other that first round. Doesn't matter because it doesn't mess with the payouts of the smaller schools. They would get the payout of their crossover game. And then if they win, they would get a chunk of the money from the next round. Kind of like how it is from, I think college basketball is like that, right? Where if a team makes it past a certain round, they get extra chunks for their conference. And so whoever wins, if the ACC is constantly making the Elite Eight, they get an Elite Eight payout. The SEC and Big Ten, they always get two Elite Eight payouts. But that's the lesser evil, right? Because then the ACC has a clear path to sell recruits. And they can do the same thing like the Big Ten East was doing, where Big Ten East has never lost to the Big Ten West in recent times. Where the ACC can say, we've never lost in that opening round, so who cares? Right? That's just a warm-up game. And that I think, is the future. But I'm going to try to write some of this out. Maybe it might be better to make a video, but I'm trying to find a list of conferences, and people are talking about them breaking away. I don't think the big conferences are going to break away because you're killing half of your audience. There are how many schools in each state? Someone from a lower state school, lower level, like lower conference, a payout or whatever you want to put it, the group of five or whatever, they're not going to become fans of the bigger school. They're just not. They're just going to stop watching. And I think the big conferences know that, so they do not want to eliminate them. That's why they're looking for ways to keep them around.
But I think they can mirror it with, and it would be in a grandiose expanded format, but I feel like they could get away with doing two super conferences. Like they have the AFC and the NFC, because the NFL model has shown to be really, really good at getting those wild card picks in, having a consistent playoff where like you're having competitive games and you're getting those teams that are deserving of the top spots in that championship game when it comes January, February.
But there's drop off though, because a lot of the college fans are alums, or they grew up near, like somehow connected to the school. And if you're eliminating, like say in Iowa State, the state of Iowa has great TV ratings because you have fans of Iowa and you have fans of Iowa State watching both teams' games. You drop Iowa State out, their graduates and stuff, they're not going to just start cheering for the Hawkeyes. They're done. They'll just start watching the NFL or keep watching the NFL, and they're just done with college. I guarantee that will happen.
But I feel like at the rate that they're going right now,
Take your dad though. Is your dad, if Pitt gets kicked out, that he going to start cheering for Penn State?
No, but I'm thinking as the NCAA continues to consume each other, a logical place to get to is using your pods format, because they have the AFC North, the AFC South. You can reorganize some of these conferences and schools so that you get a Maryland, Penn State, Pitt, and West Virginia pod. That now you're drastically cutting down some of the travel time because you have your regional pod, and then maybe you rotate with the Southern pod 1 year or the Western pod 1 year, and it creates those differential schedules and matchups, but you just have it broken up as, you know, hell, split it on the Mason-Dixon line. You have the Union and the Confederacy, and like, you know, take all the Division I schools. You're North, you're in the North. You're in South, you're in the South. Divide it by four.
So,
or however you want to split it.
I say let's pick up there next week, because I want to try to map it out. I don't know if I can find a good map software that will help me kind of do it. But I think if you did 10 games, I have to map it out. I don't want to go any longer. So if you have any ideas, let us know, because I need to see how many teams are in each conference. Because if you go to super conferences where you get to 30 teams, there's only going to be room for four or five total conferences. And that smaller conference that's like trying to mimic the Big Ten and the SEC, they're not getting any money. Like, they're not getting the same money at all. So it's almost pointless. They'll never get two teams in. That's why they need to be very careful with what happens. But we'll get back into this next week. Like I said, share any ideas you have. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.